PAC going. First and foremost, let me congratulate and thank all of my fellow commissioners here, conciliators, whatever we are, advisors, for making room in your busy schedules for this very special meeting. It was an item that Aegon and I felt like we needed to bring to the committee, and we're happy that you're able to join us in the conversation. So thank you all for being here. You might have noticed as you walked in not just an agenda but a stack of revised slides. And I'm sure as we go through the presentation they'll tell us exactly what's revised. But if you didn't get the revised slides, it's right next to the agenda. I think most people got them. One or two are getting up. I think we're fine. And so the first item on our agenda this afternoon is approval of the minutes from our last meeting, the March meeting.
Dolly, I have a correction.
Great.
I was here in spirit, but not in body.
Oh.
Okay.
All right. Well,
I think it says excused. Did she get listed twice?
Oh, did it say excused?
Well, it does say excused on the last line there.
I'm sorry. Maybe I misread that.
Yeah, I think you might have just missed the word excused.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. The minutes have been moved as presented and seconded. Great. Thank you. It was moved by Dolores and seconded by Richard Burnett. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions. And one abstention from Linda. Okay. Great. Without further ado, then, I don't have any cards from the members of the public to speak on this item, but if you're out there and you need to fill one out, please just fill out a card, and then we will recognize you when that time comes. But other than that, we'll just go ahead then and get started on our item number 4. So, Lisa.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Let me just echo on behalf of staff what Dolly said. Thank you for making time in your schedule so we could come back today and have a discussion, really continue our discussion on the Regional Express Lane Network. Last year, the California Transportation Commission found MTC eligible to implement Regional Express Lane Network. This was in response to an application that MTC submitted to them. At the time that MTC was preparing to submit that application, we did have an opportunity to discuss it with you, and the council raised a number of concerns about the application. In hindsight, you know, I think we really didn't allow enough time for discussion at that time, and now as we are starting to move forward with some pieces of the network, we wanted to return and really take some time to continue that discussion and put the steps in place to address the concerns. We are starting to move forward with an initial set of projects. We call them Phase 1. It's an initial set of projects that will convert some existing HOV lanes to express lanes. And that's, you know, as we're initiating that work now, that's a, you know, major reason for sitting back down with you. I do want to say the material I sent out was long and dense, and in the interest of time today, I probably will go through some of the slides a little bit more quickly. That shouldn't stop you. If you have any questions, you know, please just let me know. I'm happy to go back to anything, but I'm sure you don't want to hear me drone on forever. Oops. Okay. So what we really want to do today are three main things. One, we want to take some time to show you how we're going to be responding to the concerns that are previously raised. We haven't fully addressed those concerns, I think, in this material, but the bigger point is that I think we have mechanisms that we can put in place over the coming months to respond to some of those concerns more fully. Secondly, we'd like to hear any remaining questions or concerns that the council may have about the network, express lane network. And third, we'd like to determine a plan for reporting back to you over the coming months. Oops. The Regional Express Lanes Network has been in the region's long-range plan for two cycles now. It's in our current long-range plan, and it's really been part of the region's investment strategy for two key reasons that I want to remind you all of, I think. The first reason is that we really want to build on the success of the existing carpool lane system or HOV lane system in the region. The Bay Area probably has one of the most extensive carpool lane networks in the country. It's been built over about a period of about 20 years. Over all that time, it's been a really important strategy for the region to improve the system efficiency of our transportation system and improve air quality, primarily by providing a high-quality carpooling experience and making express buses, allowing them to move more quickly on the freeway. As you can see from the map, there are quite a few gaps in the system. And those gaps exist because, frankly, because we haven't identified, other than express lane revenue, which we'll talk about later, we haven't identified good sources to close those gaps. Dolly, I see that there's a question. I don't know how you want to proceed.
Federica?
Just a point of clarification so that we all start on the same page. Would you kindly provide a definition of an express lane and an HOV lane so that we all may understand, particularly those who are members of the public here as well as those of us sitting around the table, exactly what we're addressing?
Sure. I was going to talk about express lanes in a few slides as to how they work. A carpool lane or an HOV lane is a designated lane in the Bay Area. It's one lane of all the freeway lanes that operates as a carpool lane just during peak commute hours. And during that period of time, in order to use that lane, you must have more than one person in your carpool, in your car. For most of the carpool lanes in the Bay Area, that requirement is two people. You have to have a minimum of two people. And on Interstate 80 and also on some of the toll bridges, you must have three or more people in your car to be a carpool. Certain other vehicles are allowed to use the carpool lane under state law. Motorcycles are allowed to use it. Various different kinds of low-emission vehicles, depending on the current status of, of current iteration of state law, are also allowed to use the hot lane. They typically have to be specially permitted by the DMV. If you don't mind, I will hold the question of what an express lane is till for a few slides, because I do have some slides on that.
Lisa, you just referred to a hot lane, and you were talking about...
I was going to get to... Why don't I go through the slides? Because I think I will get to some of these questions. You did catch me. I slipped up, but I'll get there. again, a key strategy here is to build on success of the carpool lane, to connect it up and make it work better. A second key point is that the express lanes, I think, in many ways embody the region's fairly long-standing investment philosophy, and that philosophy puts a premium on efficiency. As you know from all your discussions on the SCS, we have a very mature transportation system in the Bay Area. We have large needs for maintenance and maintaining and operating that system, and the vast majority of funds that we spend on transportation in the region go toward that. That really requires that we make the most efficient use we can of our existing transportation infrastructure, both on the transit and the roadway side. And the money that we do spend on expansion, and you can see it's a relatively small slice of the pie, less than 20% overall, the vast majority of that is being spent on transit expansion to support the focused growth strategy of the region. So, again, I think it's incumbent on us to make sure that we're using our roadway system as efficiently as possible. Now, what is the Regional Express Lane Network? the network here, I think, directly responds to those two key context points that I mentioned earlier. Here, this is a picture of the Regional Express Lane network, and I'll explain more in a moment about how the various pieces come together. But a key point here is it's connected. We've closed gaps that currently exist in the carpool lane system to improve travel time and improve reliability. The second point is it improves our efficiency. It better uses the capacity in the carpool lanes and in the entire freeway. This is the network, all the pieces that are currently authorized today, all the pieces that can be built under state law and various approvals. The two black segments there, which show pretty well, are segments are in operation today. The areas that are highlighted in yellow are what is authorized directly under state law. And in this case, the Alameda County CMA and the Santa Clara County CMA have the authority under state law to build and operate those express lanes. And then the lanes there that are green with no highlighting, that is the 270 miles that was approved by the CTC last fall. So that is really the focus of MTC's efforts. That is what MTC is able to implement.
Randy?
Here's where I'm having an issue with with the names that you're using, because it feels like you're interchanging hot lanes and express lanes. So can we just all agree to use one word and one word only? Because I think that's the issue that I'm having in translating some of this, and that's what I'm hearing elsewhere.
So I apologize for being sloppy on that. The term that we are trying to use here is express lanes. In many places elsewhere in the country, they're called hot lanes or high occupancy toll lanes. For all intents and purposes here, they're the same thing. What we mean here is a lane that's like a carpool lane with a toll option. Carpools and buses use the lane for free. Other drivers can choose to use the lane if they're willing to pay the toll. Those tolls are collected electronically. In the Bay Area, they're collected through Fast Track. And the toll is dynamic in order to keep the lane free-flowing. And I'll give you an illustration of that in just a moment. I meant to bring a laser pointer, but I didn't bring one. Mouse? Oh, good idea. Where is my mouse? Okay. Thank you, Andy.
Lisa, can I just ask a really quick question? You didn't, on the slide before, you didn't clarify... says it's on. You didn't, can you just go back one slide? You didn't clarify what the orange is.
Right. I did not have a chance to clarify what the orange is. The orange is an operational gap closure. It is not an express lane. It is a gap in the system where we are proposing to use a variety of operational strategies such as freeway service patrol, ramp metering. Oh, excellent. Thank you. and strategies like that in order to keep the traffic flowing. It's an area we'd like very much to close with an express lane. However, it's an extremely constrained area where it would be prohibitively expensive and very environmentally impactful, I think, to widen the freeway, to add a lane. And it would also be extremely impactful to take an existing lane as an express lane in that area, and it's something that that Caltrans is not willing to consider at this point in time.
So let me just clarify one, and then I'm going to let you speak for a while. For purposes of today's discussion, we are going to define express lanes in the network as a system of carpool lanes with the ability to have a toll option.
Yes.
Okay. And some of these is on this map that's showing. Some have already been undertaken through those local CMAs like Santa Clara County and the East Bay, Alameda County, it looks like, to decide on those toll lanes. And the other greens have the ability to have a toll option, but those local counties or jurisdictions have not taken up that option.
That's not actually not quite the case. I'm glad you asked the question, because it obviously it clearly isn't clear. In the case of the green lines, the CTC's action last fall gives MTC the ability to implement those lanes. And those counties are not, they do not have that authority. Now, MTC will work closely with them in developing express lanes in those areas, but it's MTC that that has the ability to implement those lanes.
Great. Okay, thanks, Lisa. Okay.
Sure.
Sandy? Okay, and then we're really going to let her just present. Yeah.
I have another question. It's about the orange. So are there HOV lanes there now, or there are no HOV lanes even there?
There are no HOV lanes in that section of 880 right now. It's the section roughly from the airport to the Port of Oakland. And, yes, there are no HOV lanes. No. Okay, so this gives an idea of how express lanes will work. Actually, now that I have this, I'll probably find the mouse was easier because my hand is shaking a lot. Okay. and this is how it would look, how it looks to a driver using an express lane. You know, a driver driving along here in the regular lanes would see a sign announcing the an opportunity to get into the express lane. The next sign that the driver would see is a sign that shows the toll. Now, it's very hard to see the toll, what this sign shows in this particular picture. It might be a little clearer up here, but the toll will tell you, the toll sign will tell you how much it costs to get to the next point where you can get in or out of the lane. And it might show you one or two locations. And you can see that toll sign is electronic because the toll changes based on the amount of traffic that's in the lane. The next sign that you would see shows you that now is the opportunity to get in. There's the little arrow. And you can see this car here has just weaved over into the express lane and can now continue in the lane. And right here is where the toll will be charged electronically. So this is essentially a toll tag reader that would read the fast track card and know to charge a toll to that vehicle's account. And then there'll be another opening like this 4 or 5 miles down the road, and a car can see the toll, decide maybe they don't want to pay to use the lane for the next segment, and then they can exit. Where's my mouse? Here. Oops. Oh, my goodness. What happened? Oh. Okay, and then there it is. Then a car could get out, after seeing that toll sign, could get out. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, there are two operating express lanes in the Bay Area today. The first express lane to open is that which operates on I-680 southbound over the Sunol Grade. It opened in September of 2010, so it's got a fairly well established track record, I guess. The second lane that opened at the 880-237 interchange in right in the Milpitas area, that opened on March 20th, so it's really very new and you know, still kind of settling down, although I think the initial reports are largely pretty good in terms of usage and the way it's operating. In both cases, as we sort of discussed earlier, these lanes are operated by entities other than MTC. BATA does assist with the fast track toll tag and the customer service center, but other than that, BATA and MTC really have no direct role in the operations of these lanes. I think, you know, there definitely are some growing pains, if you will, with these lanes. And on the I-680 lane in particular, there have been some challenges. Enforcement has been a big challenge. User familiarity has been a challenge. And I think what's most important here is that we're taking careful notes and we're trying to learn from these experiences and able, you know, in order to improve the way that they work and the way we operate them as we go forward. This chart here really illustrates how the dynamic toll works. What you can see here is the blue line shows the average toll over the day, over during the daytime as the lane operates. It operates from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. And you can see the toll really starts to go up around 7 a.m., 6 or 7 a.m., peaks around 9 a.m., and then starts to drop again. And that's because this is southbound direction going to San Jose. That's when there's congestion on this road. So the toll goes up at that time when demand is higher. That keeps the express lane from getting too crowded. And then the rest of the day, the toll's very modest. There's not a lot of congestion on that road the rest of the day. You can also see, there it is. You can also see that on Fridays, the red line, the toll is much lower. That's probably because many people don't work on Fridays. Maybe they telecommute on Fridays. The traffic is much lower on Fridays, and therefore the demand is lower and the toll is lower. So the toll is very responsive to the traffic patterns. Now, when it comes to the MTC express lane piece, the green pieces that MTC will be implementing and operating, there are a lot of policy decisions to make about how they're going to operate and how tolls are going to be charged. And no decisions about that have been made at this time. Those are going to be the subject of future board actions. The two biggest decisions really have to do with operations and finances. Which vehicles are charged and what the hours of operation are. These are the two biggest decisions for operations and finances, I should say. When MTC submitted the application to the CTC, we had to demonstrate financial feasibility. And so we had to make some assumptions. And we made assumptions to span a range. We explored certain options. But again, we made no policy commitment to operating that way. So these checkboxes show you some of the operating policies that we explored and that there will be much more exploration of and discussion of as we go further in terms of, again, which vehicles are charged, and in particular, hours of operation. This slide gives a synopsis of the financial outlook in our CTC application. And you can see here, you know, again, that we looked at two cases to span a range. We have the base case, which is frankly a little bit more aggressive in terms of hours of operation and charging more vehicles, and a conservative case, which says we'd operate fewer hours and charge fewer vehicles. And you can see that they span a range here. Probably the most important information on this slide is right up here in this top line. The express lane network generates somewhere between $4 billion and $6 billion in revenue that can be used to complete the HOV system. That's money that we don't have today for any kind of investment. And so it's dollars we otherwise can't access. A second important point is that the network, the network leverages this stream through bond financing, right? So there's some debt proceeds that go into building this system. At the end of the day, there is some potential net revenue for the system, but it's really not the main objective of the network. The main objective of the network is completing the system and improving efficiency of the freeway system. And these net revenues really only materialize if everything goes according to plan. And given the range of policy decisions that have yet to be made, show the potential for net revenue, but really don't want to start spending that revenue anytime soon. Let me turn now, and for really most of the rest of my presentation, to address some of the concern, well, address the concerns, the six concerns that the Policy Council outlined last fall for the MTC Planning Committee. And there's, I think what the emphasis I'm really going to make today is that I think we have ways going forward to address your concerns. I'm sure that the information in the presentation today doesn't fully address them, but I do want to assure you that we have ways to address them going forward. And we have included some data from existing lanes that provides a point of reference, not intended to be the answer for the Bay Area, certainly. Four of the six comments in the memo from the Policy Advisory Council last fall reflected concerns about how low-income travelers would be affected by the express lane network. So as I mentioned earlier, we are starting work on this set of phase one projects, a set of projects that would convert some of the existing carpool lanes into express lanes, and we are now starting the environmental study process for those projects. It's probably an 18-month process. As part of that work, we will be doing both an environmental justice and Title VI analysis. We're very, very early in this process. Quite frankly, we haven't thoroughly reviewed all the requirements yet. We're just starting that now. We're also starting to look now at what other project sponsors have done for express lanes in other places, other parts of the country, in California. So we're at the early stages of this, and we thought it's a good time to talk to you guys, and in particular, if you have examples that you can point out to us, we would really welcome that, you know, that direction at this point. You can call those to our attention. Without, in the interest of time, I was not going to walk through these areas in detail. But you know, as I mentioned, we have started to do some preliminary review of issues that have, topics that have been addressed by other project sponsors. Here's a list of them. You can see that they span, you know, quite a range of interests, and we'll be defining the areas that we'll be looking at, you know, as we go forward. I want to move now to review the concerns that were raised in the council's memo to the planning committee last fall. The first point that was raised was a concern that if there is no funding for transit operations, the concern is that there is no funding for transit operations, and this is something many of you who have been with this project for a few years recall that in the Transportation 2035 plan, where we do have an express lane network, we had a much more optimistic view of the revenue potential for that network. And we were at that time hopeful that there would be quite a bit of net revenue that could be invested in all kinds of transportation improvements. But that picture has really changed, and it's changed in part because now we're at an economic downturn, which has really resulted in a big readjustment of population and job forecasts for the region. It's also changed because I think, frankly, we were overly optimistic in general. And I think now we have we have some experience with I-680. We actually know what people pay for an express lane in the region. And I think we have a much more realistic outlook on revenue potential. That said, well, with the revised revenue estimate, we don't think we're in a position to promise revenue for transit operations or anything else at this point. We do believe that the network does provide measurable benefits to transit and to carpools by closing gaps in the network. And you can see from this map that the system is well used by express buses. There is quite a bit of existing service on those lanes. And so there are definitely some potential benefits for those routes. The second point that was raised in the memo was a question about if requirements for carpool passage are increased. In other words, if those carpool lanes where now you need two people to be a carpool and could use the lane, an express lane for free if you were two people. If we were to say that you now had to have three people to use that lane for free, that this might reduce access for low-income travelers. And I think it's a very good question how changes like that affect a variety of travelers, and especially low-income travelers. But I do think it's a question that's not really about express lanes. This is a map here of carpool lanes. So even if express lanes were not ever built, and you just looked at demand for carpool lanes in the future, you can see here that much of the system would be quite crowded by 2035 based on the current occupancy requirements. Once a carpool lane reaches a certain threshold, speeds decrease to a certain degree, federal government requires that you do something. You are not allowed to let your carpool lane speeds go to 40 miles an hour. And so you're really in a situation, we would be in a situation then anyway, where we would be looking at something like increasing carpool occupancy on those lanes. So the express lanes doesn't fundamentally change that picture. This map does give you a sense, however, of how difficult it would be to tackle this piecemeal. And it's especially true if your network becomes more connected, changing HOV occupancy, for example, on a very small section of an HOV lane would be difficult for a user. You'd want to have some consistency through corridors, at least. The third point that was raised in the memo was concern that low-income travelers would be priced out of the lanes that they paid taxes to build. And here is an area where, you know, we will need to do some analysis as we move forward with the environmental process. In the meantime, there is some interesting data, I think, from some of the existing express lanes in the country. The first point here is just a summary of the current tolls on express lanes. This is the average price during a peak period. So this is, you know, the average during the congested period on these facilities throughout the country. And I think the key message here is that accessing the lanes for a fee can be less expensive than the consequences of travel delays, especially for low and lower middle income workers. For example, if someone is docked an hour's wage because they arrive late, that can be a much bigger penalty economically than the price of a trip. The price of paying a late pickup charge at childcare can also be more than the price of a trip. Now, this isn't to say that people would use the lane every day. I think what's important here is to think about the express lanes as carpool insurance. And it's congestion insurance. It's congestion insurance for everyone. The data also show, and perhaps it's really consistent with that message, the data show that low-income travelers do use the lanes and use them at higher rates than one might expect. For State Route 91 in Orange County, about 20% of the users of the express lane fall into the lowest income category here. It's true that lower income households use the express lanes less than higher income households. They also are paying less in tolls. And that leads to a second interesting finding on this, which is that compared to sales taxes, express lanes tolls may actually be more fair because it's tied to usage. And this is a finding that's been bubbling up in quite a few places now. The slide here, the graph here on the left, is from some academic researchers in Southern California. This is also a finding that came through in a recent AARP report. And so the slide here, the graph here on the left, basically what it shows is that for the State Route 91 express lanes in Orange counties, if those had been funded with sales tax instead of tolls, that the lowest income households would have paid on average $66 more per year than they pay presently as a toll funded facility. It says if the Orange County Express lanes were paid for with congestion fee, if they'd been paid for through the sales tax, but well, okay, I see what you're saying. It's a confusing slide. I struggled with this and obviously didn't get it right. If it were paid for with a sales tax, they would have paid $66 more per household annually. It's possible that I didn't get the title of this quite right.
Change in exposure.
I'll have to go back and look at that.
Flipped.
It may be flipped.
Change from
yeah.
sales tax to congestion.
It may be flipped. So my apologies. I'll double check that. Okay. The fourth question that was raised, fourth concern that was raised in the memo, was why there were no express lanes planned on US 101 in the peninsula. First off, there actually is not a small section of express lanes planned on the peninsula. The portion where there's an existing carpool lane from Santa Clara County up to Whipple, that is proposed to be converted to an express lane, and that's a project that the Santa Clara VTA has the authority to implement in cooperation with San Mateo County. There is a remaining gap, however, north of Whipple Avenue to San Francisco, where there is no carpool lane presently. This is another tough spot, and it's a spot that many of us in the region would like to close this gap. In fact, there's a study underway now that would look at how you could put a carpool lane on that system. That was the starting point for the analysis. In the initial review, it found that sort of the two most obvious solutions, either widening to add a lane or taking an existing mixed flow lane, that neither of those was workable. They both had severe impacts. They each had severe impacts. And as a result, the study is now considering what we call a hybrid alternative. And the hybrid alternative is a combination of taking an existing auxiliary lane and widening in spot locations to provide that HOV lane. The results of that study are anticipated more toward the end of this year. So I think there's more to come on this portion of the network. The last two questions dealt with whether the express lane network would increase carbon dioxide emissions or increase vehicle miles traveled. So here's another place where we need to do some work in the coming months. We are going to be doing an air quality assessment as part of our environmental document. We will look at climate change effects. We'll look at a full range of emissions as part of that analysis and look at conformity with the state implementation plan. This is an area where, frankly, I think as an industry, we've failed to do a good job of collecting data on the actual impact. And a report by the U.S. General Accounting Office sort of made this point, a very recent report, is that there just has not been good data collected on the actual impact of projects. But there's a little bit of information, a little bit of theory, I guess. So this slide here shows what should happen in theory. The gold curve here is an emissions curve that shows how carbon dioxide emissions change with speed, with vehicle speed. And you can see there's sort of a sweet spot here where emissions are minimized on the basis of per mile traveled, and that's roughly between about 40 and 50 miles per hour. So the theory is that express lanes should move you more toward, move speeds more toward that that sweet spot. They should speed up the travel in the general purpose lanes a little bit by taking some vehicles out of those lanes. And they actually may slightly moderate speeds in the HOV lane because some of those vehicles from the general purpose lanes will go into the HOV lane. So it should push you toward the sweet spot. Of course, this has to be validated through analysis, and we will be looking at that. This slide, which in the interest of time I will brush through, just shows the changes in speeds on express lane in Seattle and does show that moderating effect. Another common question is how the express lanes will impact carpooling. The first thing to note here is that state and federal law requires that you maintain a free flow conditions in the express lane. So we're not allowed to let the lanes get so crowded that they slow down to a crawl. On the more common question, I think, which is, are express lanes going to decrease carpooling? Frankly, the results are a little bit mixed. I think the good news is that there are examples where carpooling has, in fact, increased. In San Diego and in Orange County, there are documented increases in carpooling, and the graph to the right actually shows the growth in carpools been much, much, much higher than the growth in paid vehicles in San Diego on I-15. But there also are examples where there's been a documented decrease in average vehicle occupancies and carpooling in Minneapolis and Florida. And one thing we do know is that our travel models do not do a very good job of this. So this is one we probably have to do a lot more research on the ground to understand what factors are in play in the different examples. With respect to vehicle miles traveled and carbon dioxide, folks probably have the most concern about the widenings, places where we're going to add lanes in the network, and in particular, so-called extensions of the network. So this map here shows the phasing that we looked at in the CTC application. And almost any phasing scenario, what you'll see here is that the early pieces, which are really the pink, the light pink, and the green in here, and to some extent the blue, the vast majority of those are conversions. That's where we're using existing carpool lanes. The widenings, and in particular the extensions, which, I don't know why this mouse is, there we go. The red right here, and to some degree the pink, those come much later in the phasing strategy. So they're much farther out and gives us plenty of time, I think, to make sure the system is working, to learn more about how it works before we're building any new lanes. Okay. Thank you for your patience with this. I'm down now to next steps. So I'm preparing to wrap it up so we can have some good discussion. And here I have, in this section, I have added some new slides that are, you know, from the handouts on the back table. So I'll tell you where those are. I talked early on about the phase one projects that MTC is embarking on the environmental work for now. This is a map that shows those phase one projects. Again, these are all segments of freeway where there are existing carpool lanes, and we would be looking to convert them to express lanes. It's about 76 lane miles total. We will be working with Caltrans over the next few months to define the scope and schedule for the environmental process. And our goal here is to open these projects by 2015. A second major area of focus over the next few months is going to be mobilizing the Bay Area Infrastructure Financing Authority, which we call BAFA. BAFA is an existing joint powers authority between MTC and BATA, It's an entity that's, we think, very well equipped to deliver and operate the network. Essentially, what MTC would be doing is giving its authority under the CTC action to BAFA, and will be a part, MTC will be a part of BAFA, as will BATA. So the members of BAFA will be our commissioners, whom you all know. We will, however, as one of the first steps, be proposing changes to the BAFA membership to align with the geography of the Express Lane system. So BAFA is not the full commission. It's a subset of commissioners. Right now it's 7 commissioners. And we'll be proposing some reorganization of those 7 commissioners so that Alameda County, Contra Costa County, and Solano County have representation on BAFA. Those are the counties in which the green portions of the network are located. So that's an effort that will be going on in the next few months that we wanted you to know about. At the same time, you know, I wanted just to be mindful that Alameda County and VTA are continuing to operate and develop the express lanes in their jurisdictions. There are a variety of projects that they're working on that they plan to open in about the same time frame, in about the same 2015 window. And one thing that's really important to all of us is to develop policies on operations so that from a user standpoint, it's really seamless. The user shouldn't really care or know when they're going from an MTC lane to a VTA lane, I think. And actually, I should have said, this BAFA slide is one of the new slides that was not in your original mail-out. The timeline was in your original mail-out, and again, it just shows that where our near-term emphasis is, I want to emphasize where our near-term focus is for the next 3 months or so. The first is starting up the environmental work, defining that approach for the Phase 1 projects. The second is putting the pieces in place for eventual financing. That's mobilizing the Bay Area Infrastructure Authority and also securing authority for BAFA to issue bonds through an entity called the California Transportation Financing Authority. Right here, and we will. This piece in red here is new piece of information that I added since the mail out. We will be staff will be taking this as an informational item to the MTC committees in May and seeking board actions in June and July to support those processes: the BAFA reorganization and the CTF, the application to the financing authority. We'll also be starting the review of tolling and operations policies, but those really don't get finalized until we prepare to make some financial commitments, which is more in the 2013-2014 timeline. I mentioned this is a new slide we wanted to provide some more detail on. I did mention that we'll be seeking authorization from the California Transportation Financing Authority to finance the network. Here's a schedule that MTC staff is proposing for going in front of MTC and BATA on this particular topic. So again, the first step is to propose changes to the membership of BAFA and then to start the wheels spinning, I guess, if you will, on an application to the California Transportation Financing Authority, which would culminate with, we hope, an approval of that application in July. Almost there. We took the liberty, I guess, of proposing some milestones for returning to the council, and I'm sure that you will have some thoughts about when you would like us to come back as well. We think it makes sense to come back later this spring, early summer, to provide an update on the scope and schedule for the environmental work, including the environmental justice analysis, which I suspect will be of considerable interest to this group. Subsequently, it's a little hard to say now because we don't have our schedule drafted up for all of the work, but you know, we would anticipate coming back with items on our approach to the analysis, the results of environmental justice analysis as we get ready to take any recommend any board actions on tolling and operations, and you know, certainly prior to releasing the draft environmental document. This is the last slide. Again, it was just to remind you what we hope to hear back from you today. So again, thanks for your for bearing with me in what was a very long presentation.
Thanks, Lisa. I have a number of folks, but I'm going to take the chair's prerogative first. Thank you. I need clarification on a couple of things. And if I'm looking primarily right now at your page 12, because that's where some of those HOV policy choices need to be made, and since we're about policy. First, I want to start with the easy one on hours of operation. Am I understanding this correctly? If we take our existing HOV lanes and create an express lane network amongst them, that it's possible that a driver, a car with a single person in it, may, given the MTC Commission's decision to enforce an express lane system 24/7, may never be able to use those current existing HOV lanes? I mean, is that kind of the end extreme we're talking about?
Yeah, I think it is. I should say they would be able to use them for a fee.
Right. For a fee. Okay,
right. So we not be
yes.
able to use it.
Thanks
free.
For clarifying
if
that. I meant for free personally, but okay.
Right.
And then in terms of all these policy choices, I mean, I think there's a number of good discussion points here, whether to raise the number of HOV, what qualifies as an HOV, when exactly can you narrow down between now and 2014, I think you said, when those choices would be made, and at what point would you want to hear from this committee, on particularly the items here on page 12? Is that now today, or is that, will we also have a chance to weigh in the future?
I think the answer is the future. I think we haven't spent much time on the implications of these choices today, and we didn't intend for a detailed discussion of the specific choices.
Okay.
So we will have an opportunity as we more fully develop a financial plan, as we get ready to make some kind of financial commitments. That is the time at which MTC staff would ask the board to weigh in on these choices, and we would be interested in talking to the Policy Advisory Council as the run-up to that
okay.
discussion.
And then just in terms of how this system would operate on a daily basis. So I get the weaving in and out at the dash lines and when the lanes allow you to get in and out. I understand the little mechanism on in place to read your fast track and mm-hmm. charge you or not, whatever the sum is. But how does the fast track device differentiate between a car that has the appropriate number of people riding in it versus a single person?
Right. That's a good question.
That's why I asked it, of course.
every question's a good question.
No, that was, right.
That's a common question. The answer is today it does not. Today, our fast track devices here in the region don't have that capability. When carpools use the express lanes on Interstate 680, they have to take their fast track tag, put it in the Mylar bag. In order so they will not be charged. This is not a good long-term solution. It will not work at the bridge approaches where carpools do need to have a fast track tag now because they do need to pay a toll. And so we are looking at options. Now, LA is preparing to open express lanes later this year. They are using a variation of the fast track toll tag that has a switch in it where the driver or the passenger, I guess, can declare how many people are in the vehicle. So it can declare that it's one, declare that it's two, declare that it's three or more. So they're preparing to open with this. And you the idea is to combine that with observations by the California Highway Patrol. There also are actually presently on 680 devices that, as the toll tag is read, a device on a sign that lights up to say whether the tag read properly, or and it could be adapted to say what it read. Did it read as two? Did it read two people? Did it read as one people? And then the Highway Patrol would have to visually verify that. So it's certainly not a perfect situation. I won't say it's perfect. what we have today is not perfect either. Today, the CHP has to verify visually whether there's one or more people in the vehicle. So it's an area that we're hoping to improve. We're hoping to leverage video enforcement as well for this. It's a major area of focus over the next few years.
Great, thanks. I appreciate the committee's indulgence. Also, I have Frank, and then Rich, and then Tanya, and then Sandy.
The last time we met on this particular project, I had some serious misgivings, and they have not been allayed by the presentation this afternoon. This is actually, I'll use your word, not a good long-term solution to guarantee population expansion that we'll be facing by 2035. This is just a band-aid process. We are being told, if I'm correct, there is no firm decision when or not the rich folks area will be part of the express lane project. It's been proposed, it may not happen. And in fact, they will fight it so it wouldn't happen. This will be impacting poor folks. This project will impact in poor folks. It's going to be in their area. And not only that, there is no guarantee that this project will operate in the black. It's probably going to be revenue neutral or negative. And there is only one guarantee population group, actually not population group, income group who are going to benefit from this project. It's only rich folks. It will make their life easy, a little easier by using this, though they will be paying. We have been told some of this are being used quite often by poor folks, but poor folks are using about 5% of their income, and rich folks is a pocket change. That should be taken into account. And poor folks are using this because probably they feel they must. They don't have a better alternative. But it's taking money that they probably use for bread or medicine to pay for this costly service. This is not a good way to prepare for the future. I grew up in the Boston, New England area, so I'm quite familiar with, actually, what we have there, not express lane, expressway. And it's almost always an alternative to the highways where you don't have to pay. The expressways are very good. I think California will do better to plan for it because this band-aid approach is not going to mitigate what we're going to fix in the future. Thank you. And this is not, like you said, I wait to see what will happen when it's subject to Title VI and environmental report. And it's being rushed. It appears it's being rushed. The only individuals who are going to benefit are the rich folks and the people who are going to invest in this project, who are going to build it. They are the only two segments of this population are going to benefit from this guaranteed benefit. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Rich Hedges and then Tanya.
Thank you. And by the way, I don't feel badly if I have to leave at 3:15. I have another meeting right after this one. What I wanted to get into is, first of all, I voted for this the first time through, and I did it for very much the opposite reason of why Frank did, but for the same, the opposite thinking than Frank's, but for the very same reason. I felt it was the voluntary gleaning from folks who don't like to have their taxes raised of money to pay for infrastructure that everybody normally pays for. And so I liked that. But I did have some reservations as well. Thank you very much, because you've answered the question I've asked at least three times since I was on EDAC and not quite understood it, if the numbers will be raised for people in the carpool lanes. And sounds like no matter what happens, at some point they will be raised. Just a real-life example, and this is no disrespect to you, but it's not docking of a day's pay if somebody's late. I was a union rep for people who worked in a low-income service industry, and employers schedule and order for their goods based on just-in-time need. And if an employee is late, and I'm not talking about 10 minutes, they get written up. If it happens three times, they're unemployed for a year or two in this economy. So that's something we really have to make sure we don't create. Because it's and working for the union as long as I did, I began to see people working at one job for many years to having two or three jobs in one day because all of them were part-time. And that creates a problem with driving. So we need to keep how the rest of the people live that really have to struggle to support us in mind in this. Even though I am generally in favor of this and have supported it in the past, those are just cautions. And I don't see a lot unfair in this, because an awful lot of low-income people drive singly. And a proof, offering of proof, I'm on a low-income housing board. And in that board, the people that develop this housing and manage it tell me that you get as many cars as you do bedrooms. Because people commute the cost of transportation by the cost of gasoline and the old junker that they bought. The other question I have is, who distributes the cash of these that MTC doesn't have direct control over, and where does it, and how effective will that be for MTC to do other things in the future, like the transit we'd like to see expanded? That's another reason I've always been for this. And just a comment on San Mateo County, Frank, we got a lot of poor people too, and it's going to affect them. And I'm happy to say that once I was there, but no longer am I. And one of the answers to that corridor, if you can get it through the NIMBYs in San Mateo County, and I mean that with the utmost respect for the NIMBYs, is that there are large sections of Interstate 110 in Southern California that are double-decked just for that very reason. So it's more expensive, but when you start acquiring land and eminent domain, it makes it less expensive. And let me see if I have anything. So I apologize, but I tried to take notes through this, and I don't think. Oh, and as far as the technology to tell how many people are in a car, I can tell you right now the technology is in my automobile to tell how many people are in it, up to two, because my computer generates not only what address I'm in front of, but also what side of the street I'm on and what lane I'm in. And it also tells me how many people are in the car, the front two seats, because it's all generated through the computer. And if we had a system that could tap into that, you could actually tell that there's at least two people in a car if they're in that lane.
And maybe Big Brother, too. But on that note, Tanya?
Well, thank you for providing this analysis for us. And I wasn't a member of the Policy Advisory Council when this first came before the group, so I don't have a great deal of history. But I do have two questions, the first which maybe I should know the answer to, but I don't, which is why the North Bay is not part of the picture. That's my first question. And then my second question has to do with the financial analysis. You mentioned that the express lane or the HOV system will be crowded by 2035 and actually show segments that will be crowded by 2020. And I'm wondering what assumptions you built then into the financial analysis, because essentially this tells me there won't be capacity to sell to people. So have you built that into these financial models?
Right. Okay. So this is our, I guess, our second iteration on an express lane network. In our first iteration, we had a much more expansive network. It did include conversion of the carpool lanes on US 101 in Marin and Sonoma County, as well as completing the Marin-Sonoma Narrows and putting an express lane through there. When we sat down, I guess it was 2 years ago, maybe, to kind of relook at, take a second look at our first effort, we realized we had overreached. I already spoke a little bit of sort of overreaching on the revenue assumptions. And part and parcel of that, I think, was sort of overreaching on the extent of the network. When we sat down and looked at it, the Marin-Sonoma 101 corridor wasn't financially as strong as the other corridors, in part because completing that gap in the Narrows is a very heavy lift. It's really expensive. It's also true that the public acceptance, I think, of this concept is lagging a little bit compared to generally in Contra Costa, Solano, and Alameda counties, and Santa Clara County as well. And you may know that the Transportation Authority of Marin did actually do a study themselves recently, and their board decided not to go forward with its studies at this time, any additional studies at this time of express lanes. So it's something we might come back to, I think, in the future. For now, it's, you know, we've sort of focused our energies. The second question you asked, what did we assume in the financial analysis? I'm actually not sure which is the best slide to use for this. Maybe it's the HOV map slide. Maybe it's this one. You know, in our CTC application, we did these two ranges of the analysis. We did assume, because our carpool lanes will eventually crowd, and as the map showed, many of them are quite crowded by 2035. In the conservative case of our financial analysis, we did assume that carpools would have to have three people in them to be free in year 2035, not generally before then. In the base case, where I mentioned we were more aggressive in that case, we assumed that by 2020, vehicles would have to have three people in them to be free. And the 2020 piece, there was no magic about that number. You know, again, our idea here was to span a range, not to commit to either policy. The good news is it's feasible either way. It gets built a little bit faster if you increase the occupancy requirement earlier, but that may not be a choice that the region is willing to make.
Okay. Next, I have Sandy, then Naomi, Carlos, Federico, Randy, and Linda.
I, too, was not on the Policy Advisory Council the last time this was presented, so I apologize in advance. I have a lot of questions. I'm going to start just where you just ended, where you said that it would get built faster if we went to the three people. That's basically just because it will generate more revenue sooner? Okay. Okay. You had mentioned that the estimates you had were overly optimistic. Does that then change the financial analysis?
The first time we did this exercise to support the current long-range plan, Transportation 2035, that's when our estimates were more optimistic. At that time, we were doing that analysis in about 2006, 2007. At that time, the economic downturn hadn't really hit. Mm-hmm. Yet the work that's shown here represents the adjustment. So this work represents what we know about the prolonged economic downturn as of 2009. So I believe these numbers here, I think, are quite solid, and the adjustment has been made.
Okay, and I guess I need a little more explanation as to how this is going to be funded. I understand that it'll make revenue, it'll supposedly make revenue, but beyond that, I mean, it needs to get funded in the first place.
The idea is really, really to leverage the toll revenue stream to issue debt for construction. So of all the expenditures there, I guess I didn't subtotal them, but how quickly is it? $7 billion, I guess, or so, in the conservative case. That is by and large funded through debt, through issuing bonds against future toll revenue, or through revenue as it comes in. There is this other category there, and so in this model, for this analysis for our CTC application, which is not a final financial plan, it's the scenarios we've looked at to date, there is a need for some additional funding, which is this first asterisk footnote here, a need for some grant funding. Those funds haven't been identified. They could be some local money through some of the local sales taxes. They could be some federal monies. Just a couple of years ago, the federal government had an initiative where they provided funds for these kinds of congestion pricing projects. and so there are other sources, but we have not identified a specific source for those.
And I apologize in advance. This speaks to my naivete about all the funding of how MTC does stuff. Are there things that are being foregone in order to spend money on this? That decisions have been made to not do other things in order to spend funds on Express Lane Network?
No. I mean, if you look at the total, if you look at the cost of the network, again, it's really being funded. I don't know what the percentage is, but almost 100% by the toll revenue and the debt that's being that's made possible by that revenue stream.
So on slide 17, so now I'm going to start moving through the questions I had as we were going through the presentation. You talk about the number of buses that are currently, express lane buses that are currently in, going along these different corridors.
Mm-hmm.
This assumes that the funding is going to continue for these.
Right. It's a picture of a service today. So if there were cuts in operating funding for these buses, that service could decrease. That is correct.
And I, from what I read in the memo of what the Policy Advisory Council had written before, there was an issue raised about previous discussions about the funding, revenue coming from this funding transit that now was not happening. Can you speak to that? Because that was prior to my time as well.
Sure. In sort of our first iteration of the network, we had a more expansive network. We had more robust, anticipated more growth in the region, population and jobs. Frankly, in that analysis, we assumed everything, we were charging two-person carpools from day one in order to make it work financially. We were a lot more aggressive in it. In that scenario, we anticipated $6 billion in net revenue. In hindsight, that was extremely overly optimistic. It was that scenario under which we thought, oh, my goodness, we could spend money on anything and everything. you know, again, with the more realistic look, I think, on what people are willing to pay based on behavior on 680, given the current state of the economy where jobs, in 2010, there were a million fewer. I think I have that number right. I want to make sure I hit the right number. In 2010, there were a million fewer jobs in 2010, actually, than we projected when we did our original revenue forecasts. So there's been a really significant adjustment. And it's with in light of that adjustment and what we know now that we have a much more sober view of the net revenue potential.
And has there been any discussion about how the small amount of revenue will be used? I mean, is it still planned that it's going to benefit transit?
We've really deferred that discussion of how that net revenue will be used because it's net revenue that would come late in the program. Okay. There's plenty of time, I think, to talk about how that will be used. I don't think that decision needs to be made today. So we haven't not had that discussion yet.
Okay. On slide 21, and the slide about the pie chart of who's been using the express lane in Orange County, you mentioned that lowest income group is paying less in tolls. I mean, meaning as a whole group, not that lower income people pay a smaller fee, right?
Right. They're in Sarah 91, every driver is charged, pays the same fee at a given time, but low-income drivers are using the lane less frequently in the aggregate paying less.
Okay. And then slide 27. The chart of San Diego I-15 mm-hmm. that's showing that there's been a big increase in carpools. So is it validated, just so I understand this, because this could easily be a lot of people that are going through the lane not having fast track mm-hmm. and also not being a carpool and not being caught as well, right?
Right.
This is just actually just checking the number of cars that went through, which ones had a fast track in place and which did not.
Both the California Highway Patrol and SANDAG that operates the lanes has a strong interest in understanding the violation rate. So I don't know. I have to check with SANDAG on the exact details behind the slide. But I would say this represents their best estimate of carpools. They have tried to discount violators.
Okay. Yeah. And so that was actually my other related to another question I had when you talked about CHP having to confirm mm-hmm. the number of passengers in the car. So currently in the Sunol Express Lane, is there a CHP officer in place at all times validating, or is it just random spot checks?
It's more spot checks. I mean, they've done some analysis of when it's most important to have a CHP officer out there, but it's not full-time.
Okay. Sorry, I can apologize in advance. Like I said, I have a lot of questions. Okay, my last one is about timing, the timeline. So the environmental justice analysis and the EIR and the draft EIR are going to be prepared prior to the discussion of the policy, the operating policy decisions? Because wouldn't that impact?
Right. I think there'll be I think the discussions will go on to some degree in parallel, but I think we would not be making, not really be locking into operations policies until at least the draft is out, a draft environmental document is out.
So we do the draft without being sure how many numbers we're actually talking about of being in the cars and the hours?
We will. There'll be an iterative process. Well, we'll be looking in the environmental document at what we think it will be, and then we will. We won't lock into operating policies, but we will have opportunities to get
to get some direction.
Like they'll inform the different alternatives,
yes,
probably?
Yes, they can inform. Yeah, okay. You're saying it better than
okay.
I.
I just, yes. I was trying to understand that. That wasn't quite making sense to me. Okay. I will probably make comments later. I think I got all my questions answered. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. We have Naomi and then Carlos, then Federico.
Okay, thank you. I have a general comment and a couple of specific things. First of all, I personally am not really car-oriented. I own a vehicle that somebody else drives me pretty much one day a week. I'm on transit every other day, and sometimes that day as well. So I'm hardly the last person that's like, yay, roads. But I've been getting some training at the Mineta Institute and learning a little bit more about these. And I actually am in favor of these projects because they do have the ability to reduce congestion and time in congestion and improve quality of life for a really wide swath of people. Also, because the option of tolling takes us back to user-based fees and takes us back to an earlier time historically when that was actually how we paid for our transportation revenue quite a bit was through tolling. And now with technology, we can get ourselves back closer to that, and this is a good way to go about that, I think. And also, I like the fact that it's basically cost neutral because of the tolls that it generates and the financing that we can do on it. It doesn't. We get these benefits without spending a whole lot to do it that we would perhaps, as we've noted, rather spend on other things if we could. So specifically, I wanted to suggest that with the EJ analysis with the Southern California programs, that you look specifically at people coming in from Riverside and San Bernardino County and commuting into the Orange County and San Diego County, because I know there's a lot of people who are doing that. This is a more of a question, finally, is because of the toll revenue, I know that there's a greater option for employing public-private partnerships and then thus reducing some of the risk, cost risk that is associated with this, and I wanted to know how much the MTC was looking into that. I know that because of the Presidio, we have a little leeriness about public-private partnerships, but I know down south, from what I've learned about the projects down south, that it's worked very well for at least two-thirds of them.
Hi, I figure I might as well participate for a minute here. Andy Fremier, I'm the Deputy Executive Director of Operations. That is a really good question, and Doyle is an interesting case. You know, there's a good joke about public-private partnerships, and that is when you've seen one, you've seen one. They're all very different. But when we went from our original plan, which was specific legislation to give the Bay Area Toll Authority authorization to develop the robust network that Lisa talked about, when we went back to what we call Plan B, we decided to use existing legislation and cobbled together really three very important pieces of law that already exist. The first was the action that gave us authority from the California Transportation Commission to apply for a network, which we received. The second is this opportunity to use the California Transportation Financing Authority to help us with the financing aspect of the program. The third is to try to evaluate whether or not alternative delivery mechanisms would make sense. And SB4X has some legislation that allowed for Doyle Drive, but it also allows for public-private partnerships, which really can range anywhere from design-build all the way to design-build, operate, finance, and maintain. And we think that there is probably a model that will work well for us, again, hoping to shave delivery time of projects because that's where you can actually save the most. In terms of delivering a project earlier, you don't have escalation prices, you get to use them earlier, et cetera. So bottom line is, yeah, we think there's an effective model in there somewhere under that P3 legislation to help us deliver the projects earlier and potentially operate them more efficiently.
Thank you.
Carlos?
I wanted to start with some comments, and I'm even going to try and frame some of my questions into comments, and then I have a few kind of technical questions I wanted to ask just for clarification. But to start with, one thing that I heard today, because I guess I am a veteran of this conversation a couple times over, and so and not to beat the old drum over and over again, but because I know Lisa's already talked about it, you know, that there was a kind of an exuberance of what this revenue was going to come from this from the very beginning, and it kind of led us on. The reaction happened at the last time that we had this. It was like, what? You know, we came back to this, and all the money was suddenly, all the benefit that we thought was going to be there was kind of stripped away. And so just to say that is I also noticed in this particular presentation that there is, to me, I sense a different framing of what the benefit of this is. And when the comparison with the sales tax, if you were to do the same thing with sales tax versus kind of user fees. And you know, I just want to note that. Just want to say that because in terms of the future capacity of our network, because what I'm hearing is we're going to reach a capacity. How do we want to pay for it? That's the reason why we're here, trying to decide on or discuss this right now at this point. I guess I share a little skepticism about, you know, these seem conservative today, but what happens if these start costing more? And less revenue starts. So I don't want to. Like I said, I want to keep beating that drum because I just from experience from the old MCAC days to today that the projections went way down. I guess I'll be a little skeptical that they might continue going down. The other thing I was going to say is from a kind of a commentary standpoint is if there are future revenues. I think I heard one of the previous answers. I think they should be set aside to address mitigations for the lower income populations that are being affected by this. I don't know at what point, but I think that needs to be made clear and hopefully a statement that said, you know, that's what would happen. And we don't have to be specific at this point as to where it goes, and because it may be in the out years or whatever, but there should be a kind of a dedication or you know, kind of a not a promise, but just kind of putting it out there that's what should be happening. The other thing I was going to say too, and kind of a question comment, is if the state is mandating that the lanes keep flowing, and I've heard, you know, that one of the ways to do that is to start increasing the HOV occupancy. And we have already seen it on the Bay Bridge, where now suddenly you start charging. So there may be another implication here at some point in terms, once again, in terms of equity standpoint, is that even the carpools will start getting charged at some point. So I'm just going to leave it at that. And then my couple of kind of technical clarification questions, I think one of them was, a few of them were answered already, because I was kind of curious about Orange County's the pie chart, and because I was curious, I'm assuming they use fast track technology just like we do in the Bay Area. Okay, and so the question I have is, there must be some fast track analysis that's been done of how many households that are low income versus percentage wise, how many are using the fast track technology, because I see that as potentially a barrier. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's so ubiquitous now that everyone has it. But knowing from my examples that I've said before, at least on the Clipper technology, it's not widely used, in especially in the populations that tend to use, in the case of Clipper, in terms of use of transit. So, like I said, I don't know fast track that well. So that was one question commentary, and then the other one is, I'm assuming, because I kept hearing that there's these express lanes are being brought in as freeways are being widened, and I just want to be sure that are there any that are going to be taking out a lane? Because then that's when you get into the concern of, okay, now there's not a lane that used to be available to everyone, and that, so I just wanted to get that clarification.
Let's see. So I think there were two questions that you wanted response to, and tell me if there were more. One was, is there data on how many low-income households use Fast Track? You know, I don't know right now what data we have or don't have, but I do know that this is an area that we'll be looking at as we go forward. It is an area that's been looked at in it's commonly looked at for all of these express lane projects, and we will look at it too. What kind of access do folks have?
Can I add to that too? Just a couple of points of reference on Fast Track. Fast Track is free. There is a deposit required on the tag, but even that is pretty minimal, especially spread out over time, but the deposit is returned if you return the tag. The tag itself is free. That's the current model that is out there. The difficulty in some respects between comparing Clipper to Fast Track is Fast Track is actually quite a bit, almost unanimously, auto load, which requires a credit card. And that's probably where the question starts to come up as to whether or not the unbanked can manage it with a credit card. But you can also pay and update Fast Track accounts with cash. So you can send in a check, drop off money. There are several areas around. There's currently a couple of locations where you can drop in and pay cash. But with the Golden Gate Bridge going to all electronic tolling, they're going to set up a whole cash paying network. So a lot of those problems, I think, are not really related to the ability to use the lanes by all pretty effectively.
The second question you asked had to do with add a lane, take a lane. So what this map shows, if you just concentrate on what's solid and what's dashed, any place that is, any of the lanes that are solid on this map are, which may be easier to see on your handout than on the screen. any of the lanes that are solid are places where we're talking about converting an existing carpool lane. And the areas where there are dashed lines are places where we're talking about widening to add a travel lane. In no places here are we talking about taking what is currently a mixed flow general purpose lane.
Carlos, is that it? Okay, so I have Federico, Randy, Linda, Agon, and now Gerald.
First, thank you for coming back and presenting additional clarification on points raised by the Policy Advisory Council on its previous presentation by you. This obviously may be the minority view here, but I'll express it and emphasize it's my own. I thought that the idea of the express lane, as previously presented, was a poor concept, and nothing that has been said today has convinced me otherwise. I think of it as a staff-driven idea in search of a justification.
Amen.
In general, let me say that I commute regularly, and let me be more specific, 2 to 3 times a week from Contra Costa County, the city of Lafayette, where I reside, to San Jose. So I proceed down 680 regularly through and bypass the express lane. My observation, based solely upon these multiple trips, is that it is a failure financially and a failure politically. All I have encountered in communication with individuals who employ that route is frustration, anger, and annoyance with that express lane. Annoyance because of the uncertainty of cost. Annoyance with the congestion while that lane sits at frequently underutilized. And frustration at the failure, and everybody who drives that route is cognizant of the fact that there are substantial abuses that go unchecked. I also find fault with the general concept in its proceeding forward in that it apparently is based upon a variety of quote-unquote, in theory, it should work this way, but we have very little in the way of actual fact to back up quote-unquote, the theory.
Yes.
I am disturbed that we are proceeding so rapidly without foundational fact to support that which the staff wishes to proceed forward on. With regards to its impact on minority communities, I am troubled further by the notion that while on one hand you say, we, can proceed without local jurisdictional consent, we have that political authority. On the other hand, you say that in those areas of our service area, that is the MTC area, that happen just to be the most non-minority areas, San Mateo and Marin, Sonoma, we are more cognizant of their political aspirations. And therefore, we don't proceed. It's too costly. It's too politically fraught with problems. But in these other areas that just happen to be heavily minority areas, we proceed along those. Now, I do a lot of pro bono work with low-income individuals. And my sense, again, my sense, just based upon conversation over the years, is that you will not have that decision made, oh, I'm going to be late for work, so I'm going to use that fast track. The people I work with are making minimum wage, maybe 10 to, if they're lucky, $15 an hour. They are not going to opt for paying $4 an hour to go down $6.80. They won't. So they will sit there in that congested traffic, adding further to that pollution that you say will somehow evaporate because we put on these express lanes. In conclusion, I think this is a bad idea as presently drawn. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Randy?
Thank you. As one of the legacy people who was here for the initial conversation, I am going to beat on the drum because we were told that the revenue generated from this system would be financing programs such as BRT and other transit amenities that would benefit the low-income and minority populations. That was the argument that we got. There were several benefits, but among those was going to be that. So now I'm hearing that's not happening, but the benefits similar to that may come further down the line in the program. So I can't believe in that at this point. I can't believe in a future that's not mandated. So I guess my question is, how do we mandate that? That's number one question. But just from a constructive point of view on VTA, for instance. So my understanding is that all of these roads are approved through MTC's umbrella, for lack of a better word, that all of this system, even though VTA is going to do their own build out of it, no. Okay, so VTA has their own approval. So there's nothing that we can do on a regional basis that says these are the guidelines under which these roads are being constructed for the region. They will achieve this type of benefit, not just moving cars off the road, but moving people into transit. Because out of all of this, I see nothing about moving people into transit. And that really concerns me because we're only talking about impacting how many cars we can get on a road at any given time and how much we're going to charge them. So we're developing a regional system over which we don't have regional control. Am I reading this correctly?
Let me try to answer that a little bit. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to satisfy you. The map
you won't be the first.
represents really the I think one of the problems with the system, and that is that in some respects we're modeling the transit model, where you have many different operators in a network that affects an entire region. We can't do anything about that. The law, as stipulated, gave the VTA and Alameda County their own specific authority. The authority that MTC was given with local consent. And so in addressing Federico's question, it was given with local consent, but the authority is now with MTC. And the idea is to get representation in those counties through our commissioners. So we do anticipate through the environmental process and all keeping local consent as projects move forward. I've been involved in this project for most of the time that I've been in MTC, which is just about 7 years, and I don't recall us ever saying guaranteed transit. Now, part of the problem might be there's a whole bunch of people talking about hot lanes and giving promises about what they make. We did say when we first looked at it, when we figured that we would have some robust numbers, that it could be used for any purpose that the commission or policy dictated, and that's still true. What we're just cautioning is the best improvement for transit is to get the footprint down on the ground and complete the HOV network. And then if and when there's revenue, let's figure out what's the best way to use it. And it's an open question. That's a policy question that the commission will entertain all kinds of points of view. So I'm pretty confident, based on the track record of the commission, that they're going to be receptive to those discussions if and when there's additional revenue. The caution is we just can't quite see that there's going to be additional revenue.
So we would only have control over the revenue that we control, not over VTA's revenue. Okay,
yeah, that
I just want to make that really clear. That's a big chunk of all of that map.
If I could, though, add, we're working very closely, in particular with Alameda County, on trying to address it more as a network. And so we can, through agreement, as long as the other parties are willing, negotiate additional control through the different systems at some kind of a quid pro quo. You know, it would require some kind of a buyout or something like that that might offer a benefit to, say, Alameda to give up control. But that has not been done and doesn't exist today. One point, though, that Lisa made earlier, which I think is important, and that is from the customer's perspective, though, all these lanes are operating the same in terms of operations are going through a standard process which involves Caltrans, the Highway Patrol, and MTC in terms of developing the hours of operation and developing occupancy requirements. So they go through a uniform process to make those decisions. It's been tried and true for a long time. In addition to that, all of the signing, all of the customer service is happening through one source. So as a customer, you see the same signs, you get the same information, you call the same person in order to get a problem resolved. And so we are trying, from a customer perspective, at keeping it a uniform network, and that's the best we can do right now.
Okay, that part I get. I don't have an issue with. The funding of the original network was done how? Because this kind of goes back to a question that Sandy asked that I don't think was answered.
The funding of the original network, for the most part, in the olden days, was done with federal taxes.
The hot lanes.
Taxes. No, just the highway lanes.
The current existing, what we are calling hot lanes, the toll lanes, was funded how?
Well, the two black lines is what we're talking about. All kinds of different ways. A combination of local, state, all kinds of different fund sources were used to build out the black hot lanes.
So the proposal going forward is to bond out, to incur bond obligations, theoretically, to fund the expansion of the network, and the revenue goes back to pay off the debt. So you're paying your debt service, right?
The financial plan has not been defined, but our analysis to get the application assumed all kinds of different fund sources again. Some of it could be pay-as-you-go, in which case you would go very slowly, which is an acceptable approach. To go faster, to bring money into the system, there would have to be some financing, and so that was the other bookend of assumption. There has been no particular assumption based on one single financial plan, but the benefit is the assumption that you get it built sooner, you can use it, you can then operate it and pay off that debt. Again, one important feature that we kind of breezed through in one of the slides is, as it's optional to use the lane, it's also optional to build the lane. And so what our first phase is intended to do is conversions of existing lanes, which are very low cost in infrastructure. It's essentially putting in the tolling infrastructure, the gantries and the IT hardware associated with reading the fast track and setting the dynamic tolls. Very low risk. As you move into some of the bigger projects, which are big direct connect interchanges, et cetera, the costs and the risk go up. They're not scheduled to happen early, and they're also not scheduled to happen before we have the opportunity to connect some of these networks and really see some benefit. at a low-cost investment, which is the first phase.
But I just want to be clear. I'm hearing bonding as a primary source, as one of the primary sources for doing this, which means you have to pay off your debt service, which leads to the question of what's the maximum you're looking at on toll charges, for instance? Is there a maximum, or am I going to – is it too early to tell?
Okay. But, you know, the idea, again, in the phasing is you don't need to bond against the early delivery projects. And you can still control the market in terms of how much expansion you intend to do based on your history and what you believe you can afford. And that will be produced in terms of financial plans that are presented publicly, too.
But my concern is we started off with an aggressive program based on unrealistic ideas. And we sat in this room and said, that's really unrealistic. We're on the ground. We know the economy's not as good as you think it is. So now we have a system that had we bonded it, had we paid for it with bonds, we don't have the revenue stream to pay for that. So I guess my concern is that going forward, we're really clear that that's a concept that can't work for bonding. And so I want to put that concern out there. I'm in a city with a $4 billion redevelopment debt, so I'm all about don't incur debt that we can't pay for. So there's that. I want to say, though, that completing or this system or expanding it without the technology to back it up right now is, to me, a very scary thing, because we're depending on self-reporting, which isn't working according to anything that I'm seeing, and we're depending on CHP to do confirmations, and so to me that defeats the purpose of having a system that's electronically run through Fast Track. But actually isn't actually run through Fast Track. It's the honest people that are going into the system that are getting that benefit. So that is a major concern, and I would be really hesitant to say I approve anything until that technological problem is addressed. It's inconceivable to me to add more problems, because back end we're going to have to come back and fix it, and let's fix it while it's small rather than expand it throughout the entire network and then have to come back and redo it. I have a number of other questions, but I'll hold them. Thanks.
Okay, and speaking about holding things, I am holding a couple of public comment cards also, but we still have quite a list here. So I might encourage you, if you agree with somebody's comment, maybe you state that instead of restating it. I think that'll help move the conversation on a little bit. I'm just afraid we're about to lose our quorum, as we normally do at about 12 minutes from the end of our meeting. So I have Linda, then Agon, then Gerald, then Frank again.
Okay, I will limit my comments then. One thing I wanted to know is in particular, how BART to Livermore is going to affect this, because what you show out here now is a carpool lane that was put in by Caltrans, we were told, with 20-year pavement because they knew BART was coming in. Now, is this all, you know, because I truly believe now that BART to Livermore is going to be included in the expenditure plan, that we are finally going to move on this one. And so this is something that, you know, how are you going to do that? That's one thing I'd like to know. The other thing is, you talk about a network. A network has almost got to be a closed loop. In this particular instance, we have at least three areas where the carpool lanes are coming in from outside the counties that are involved. How are you going to do this when people coming in from the outside, and particularly like 580, which is probably one of the, well, it's the second most crowded in the Bay Area, all these people are coming over the hill and coming into the area, don't necessarily have a way of paying to get into the tolls?
Well, the Alameda County Transportation Commission is right now working on express lanes on I-580, eastbound and westbound. They have the jurisdiction over building and operating those lanes. They are planning, I'm sure, to do extensive marketing, if you will, to San Joaquin County residents who drive in that corridor so that they can acquire fast-track transponders to use the lane. So I think that they will really be doing some very focused outreach there to make sure that those commuters can use the lane. In terms of the BART project, I am unable to speak to the specifics of that. I know that it is something that is being worked on. Alameda County CTC is wearing both hats, the expenditure program and also developing the express lane project in that corridor. And I know that they are thinking about how they are going to work that out, how to make both projects work. But I don't know what the solution is presently.
My reason of saying that was because I know that they talked at one time about, okay, we're going to take the BART right-of-way to build the carpool lane because you need that now. But when BART comes in, we're going to have to do something else. So getting back to your comment about just, you know, the expenditure to do these kinds of things is just putting up, you know, some signage and all this kind of thing. It's not. It's going to be building a new road.
Well, again, you got to focus, I think, a little bit on jurisdictional control, right, wrong, or indifferent. And the discussion that you're having on 580 is not something that's part of our financial analysis in terms of solving. That's Alameda County's responsibility, and they're making choices along with the tax measure and other sources to figure out how to stage their construction and what projects they deliver.
Okay.
Egon?
Just wanted to point out a problem.
Thank you. I'll try to go quickly on this, and just to go back to, not to be repetitive, but I think Federico and Naomi both differently hit at the crux of the big challenge that you're facing in all of this. On the one hand, we have to price our roads. We have to have user fees, and there's no question about it, and this is a step in that direction. On the other hand, you're expending a huge amount of political capital for this. Lots of folks here have a lot of issues about it. People are looking at the lanes, seeing them not well used. And I think it leads to the sort of broader point that I have, is that I don't think you're getting enough out of this that we ultimately need. I mean, the kind of long-term game that I think MTC needs to be thinking about is what happens in the absence of the federal government fundamentally paying for transportation the way they have for 50 years. And I think that's the scenario which MTC needs to begin thinking about. And that kind of looking out, who cares what happens in 2012, but beyond, we're just not going to be in a scenario where the federal gas tax and federal spending are going to pay for transportation. So we got to radically shift how we pay for things. Probably that means full lane tolls across many highways throughout our regions. So my major concern with the hot lane, express lane approach is that it could potentially preclude that. Now, obviously, full lane tolls have a whole different set of equity concerns and technology complexities, but you're pursuing a multi-decade vision for a network of some kind that this will lead to my sort of first question is, how does this preclude a much more dramatic, different way of, frankly, managing overall system? Because I don't see hot lanes as achieving this sort of, Federico is kind of pushing back and saying, well, what are you trying to achieve here? The goal you're trying to solve, you're saying you want more efficiency, but the problem is excess demand, right? Congestion's not a problem. Congestion's indicative of demand. You solve demand by changing that, spreading it out, pricing it. This isn't solving demand because it's just pricing to pay for an expansion or an existing lane. So this is a much longer discussion about kind of how MTC is thinking about the future and thinking about how to manage kind of Bay Area's highways, frankly, not freeways anymore, highways, going out long-term. But the specific question, and I have a couple of other little ones, is how does the spending on hot lanes, what's the sunk cost, and how does it preclude potential all-lane tolls in the future?
Egon, I don't think it does preclude all-lane tolls in the future. I think the phasing you know, the phasing strategy that we explored in the application that, you know, we're not locked into. But, you know, any way you look at it, it's a program that would be built over a long period of time. As Andy mentioned, it's built incrementally. You start with the conversions, conversions which are, you know, putting in signs and toll equipment can run from $1 million to $2 million a mile, about. You start with that. Along the way, you can change course. And the period of 20 plus years, a lot of things are going to change. Technology is going to change a lot. Those, I can guarantee one thing, the lanes that we build in 2035 are not going to look like the lanes that we build in 2015, technologically. And they may, and maybe you're right, maybe you will have full road tolling by then. So technology can change, policies can change, the funding picture can change, a lot of things can change. And I think what's important about this strategy is it starts with the lower risk pieces. There's a vision of completing the network. But if things change as you go along, you adapt your strategy. Now, it's important as you develop a financial plan to be mindful of those opportunities, right? And we haven't gotten to that level of detail yet in the financial plan. But I think that that's, you know, that fundamentally that's the approach. I also think, you know, you probably heard before, and you probably hear again, that well, if we want to get to, if one wants to get to full road tolling as a way to manage demand, as a way to address shortcomings at the federal or state level in funding, whatever your reasons may be, you have to start somewhere. And offering a voluntary option that introduces the notion of congestion pricing and introduces the notion that you can get, you know, user pay and getting value for what the user pays directly is a place to start.
I would just submit, I think MTC probably would have been better off selecting a segment like the I-80 from Carquinez to the Bay Bridge to do full lane tolling, and done the political capital to build that out, make that happen, and forget about the express lane network for now. I think that would have been a more effective strategy to prove the point, because I think the pushback is demonstrating that people maybe aren't, I don't think they're learning about pricing. And maybe it's too early. Maybe 5, 6, 7 years from now, they will.
You know, if I could, and I don't want to prolong the question, because it is a good question, but I agree with Lisa. We're not precluding tolling the entire network. In fact, two things that we've done in particular that I think benefit that question are, one, putting in the infrastructure relative to fiber optics and electrical components and things like that that are required under any scenario. So while we're not monitoring all lanes, we're setting up a backbone, an IT backbone that will allow us to move in that direction, one. The second thing, there's a very distinct difference in what our proposal is, and we've tried to articulate over the course of our experience with it. When you compare what's being built or was built on 680, that's not the footprint we're talking about. So we're not making a big investment in infrastructure that's particularly related to the hot lane itself. It's related to finishing the HOV system that has been a part of the MTC's plan for many, many cycles. And that's all we're trying to accomplish, is build out what was believed to be a reasonable, complete HOV network, and we're trying to find a way to finance that. We are staying away from additional concrete and pavement in order to avoid that added infrastructure cost that will be a throwaway when the technology catches up to the problem and starts moving into the pricing arena. So that's our thought with it.
I would just encourage you maybe to use that argument kind of as a part. I think it's a useful one. A couple other little things. Okay, on the expansion and GHG piece, you didn't address the induced demand issue. So it would be something, I don't know if Dave Vorey or the modeling staff has kind of looked at that, but that's, now that, I know there was concerns with the prior modeler back and forth around that question of induced demand, or just, I should say, differences of viewpoint, but now that there's new staff to look at how that would be. I still, though, am a little concerned about the kind of HOT at the region's edge, that sort of being part of it. Maybe it's been, those HOV lanes have been in MTC plans for a long time, but it would seem under SB 375, we're trying to not encourage expansion that's connecting between existing regions. Lastly, kind of two other quick things. One, on the take-a-lane, I'd like to understand better why, I think I understand why Caltrans doesn't want you to take a lane on 101 in San Mateo County, but I guess I'm not accepting that there's too much pushback from them. I think that there's a broader question. Again, getting back to overall management of the highway system, we're going to have to be in a scenario of take a lane or on Hospital Curve in San Francisco. I mean, there's places where if HOV really makes sense, we have to do it. Lastly, on an issue, no one has touched this BIFA. Is that how you say it? Are they going to make policy decisions, or are they simply going to be the monitoring board that approves the bonds?
No, they would make policy decisions, mainly because of the fact that they've got the fiduciary responsibility to deal with the bonds.
So I guess my concern is merely that if it's only the seven people of the particular counties that they're in, policy decisions like, I assume, the number of people that should be in an HOV lane strikes me as an issue that's more on a region-wide basis. And so I would respectfully propose that maybe BIFA, and BIFA is basically MTC, and BATA is this MTC as well. I understand it's sort of a subset, but it seems that if there's really a policy decision, it ought to flow to the whole commission.
That's a fair question. That'll be debated in May and June, and I think it's a legitimate question to be asked. It's not only representatives from the counties, though. The idea is to make sure there's at least one representative from the counties that have projects in their jurisdiction, so it ensures local participation in the discussion without losing the regional discussion, because you can't have a majority of those counties. And again, we've just put some straw men forward, but there's plenty of ways to skin that to cover your concern, I believe.
And I respect, or I assume, that the commissioners who won't be on it will have strong opinions about it, but it just something that it seems it's a regional decision. Thank you, though, and congratulations on moving it this far and getting it through the continued political process.
All right, we have our last two speakers, Gerald and then Frank.
Okay, here we go. Looking at the challenges, enforcement, 250. Sandy, I'll answer your question. If I'm out there like I was, you've got 20, 30 miles of road. You just can't sit in one place, and they don't want to see you sitting in one place. You have to move. You have to take the collisions, the arrests, the broken down car. It's all in this pie, so don't plan on me ever seeing me write 200 tickets in a day. What the department will do is probably go into overtime to enforce this. 4 hours at a crack. So that's how you'll get your violators in this education. I have driven 680, and I see that 1/64 of an inch of paint does not keep you in the lane or out of it at any given time. And the reason you do that is to avoid that teleprompter up there, or whatever you want to call it. Get in, get out, before it, after it, whatever you got to do to avoid paying the fee. I don't know how we're going to enforce it, except a set of eyes. Well, you're not going to get a set of eyes there every time. Maybe 1 in 100, you know. Let's play the odds. So the egress, ingress of that, it's up in the air. What is that thing up there going to tell you? It's going to tell you you have a tracking device, that's all. I don't know how you're going to count the numbers. And if you've ever seen a camera photo, it does take a picture of that driver when they're solo. And you might see the passenger. But when we start arguing about 3 to a car, who's in the back seat? Can we tell if there's anyone in the back seat with tinted windows now? I mean, I had a tough enough time in enforcement figuring out if there was a passenger or not, you know, especially when they're at some time they were 5 years old, you know. You don't figure it out until you pull them over. And that's the other issue. Every time you pull somebody over, whether it's 3 lanes, 4 lanes, or 5 lanes, you know, when they see that red light, it's moved to the right. Now I got to slow down 4 more lanes or whatever it is out there to do this enforcement. So I got to stop the world for this. And maybe we'll get a citation out of it. There's no guarantees, you know, especially with the tinted windows now. So it's just not going to be there. I don't know what system we are going to use to enforce it, other than a set of eyes and a car there. You know, I don't know if the highway patrol's got the manpower. I know we got plenty of overtime, I guess, when I was on. So if you don't mind, we'll go ahead with it. Thank you.
You know, if I could just say one thing again, these are all very hard arguments to, I think, turn somebody's position on. But the problem relative to enforcement exists with HOV lanes as well as with HOT lanes. So if you look at enforcement on HOV lanes today, which are paid by federal taxes and local sales tax dollars, just like this assumption of voluntary pay, there is very poor enforcement technology in the current system today, regardless of the HOT versus HOV question. I just would urge you to think a little bit about making sure that there is a separation in the conversation, because a lot of the things that we're saying are true today, regardless of this HOT question or express lane question.
I'll be quick. On the issue of Robin Peter to pay Paul, I want to know what percentage of the express lane is made up of a converting carpool lane or regular lane into the express lane. And the second question is, I would like to get the user profile analysis of the fast track holder. If you can tell us the demographics or the income of the individuals using the fast track, this should be able to be obtained. So you gave us Federico a response to it, Federico or Carlos, about the fast track, but what you said was not sufficient, did not really answer the question. We want to know the breakdown of people who own fast tracks. Thank you.
Thank you. We have two speakers from the community. The first is going to be Lindsay. The second will be Pat. 2 minutes, I think, here.
Okay. Can you hear me? Lindsay Emai, Urban Habitat. Just wanted to really appreciate the discussion that was had today. I think it was a really rich discussion, and people asked great questions. Asked a lot of the questions that I had. So I work for an environmental justice organization. Our focus is low-income communities of color, their access, their transit access, and their mobility. The framework we use, and I think this is something you're all very familiar with, is what are the benefits and what are the burdens of any particular project? And so those are the questions that are coming up for us when we look at this proposal. We're not ideologically opposed to congestion pricing. We believe we're going to need to move there, but it has to be done thoughtfully, it has to be done equitably. One question that did come up that I think Randy harped on quite a bit was just what does this mean for low-income people's mobility, and what about the transit? For congestion pricing to work, I'm not an expert in congestion pricing, but looking at some of the other models across the world, you know, in London, it's hailed as a big success, their cordon pricing, but it was complemented, right? When they started charging people for driving to the city center, they complemented it by putting tens of thousands of additional bus service on the street to give people real alternatives. So I think one question when you're looking at the EJ analysis, we're glad you're doing an EJ analysis, we know you have to, but this is going to be really important. We hope that there's a full discussion about what that analysis entails. I know there is a slide on
Lindsay.
It, but I think we should go deeper into it. So one thing is to look at the mitigations. That's going to be key. The other concern that really remains for us is the additional highway mileage. Do we need to be adding so many lanes of highways just to complete the network? Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Pat, 2 minutes.
So make the important questions first. On page 13, the financial non-plan that's been referenced several times, I just want to make sure I'm not reading this totally crooked. For the conservative case, line 2, there would be $2.4 billion in debt proceeds that would be repaid by $2.3 in debt service. You're going to make money by borrowing? And the hesitation.
Would you like to ask all your questions first?
While they're looking in shock. So, there was a statement that the the HOV / express lane systems would provide measurable benefits for transit. So what are those metrics? When will they be identified, and how will they tie into the TSP? For the on page 23, the Peninsula study in San Mateo County, who's the lead agency, and how can they, presumably they will be providing some information to this body as that study proceeds? And can you also provide a link for everybody to the GAO report on page 24?
But great.
Please explain that one. Am I reading it totally crooked?
I think there's, you know, these are been, numbers have been rounded.
Yeah,
so
but
I'm thinking that this is a rounding issue. That I mean, it's the debt service and the debt proceeds are off by a rounding. They're rounded to the hundreds of millions.
I mean, there's such a huge difference between percentages between the base case and the conservative case. So
probably a longer discussion than we have now at 10 minutes over.
But if you could provide a response, that would be very helpful.
Okay, so any other comments? Aegon?
The only comment I wanted to make, if others agree, we probably can't make a motion anymore, but just this question of BIFA and whether can we make a motion or what's our?
Hang on 1 second. are you leaving, Richard?
I need to.
Okay. Well, I think Aegon wanted to.
Yeah, I just wanted to double check. Will there be answers to the other questions I asked at some point?
I think what I'll do is I'll put together a set of answers to the questions we didn't get to answer.
Okay. So, Aegon, we don't have a quorum for a motion. But Aegon did want to propose some strong language.
I just wanted to propose, there's a lot of things that have been said here, and I think a lot of it's sort of in the comment realm, but just on the specific question of BIFA, is there any way that we can strongly encourage MTC staff to come back to us for a discussion about that? Because it really is a policy issue before the decision is made, so that we have a chance to weigh in on should BIFA be all the commissioners or not? And a lot of other things we've talked about today, but just on that one particular issue.
So if I can just respond briefly, here's the schedule for taking these actions. You can see it's over a three-month period, a two-and-a-half-month period. The idea was to allow plenty of time. In May, staff will be doing an informational item on BAFA membership. I think the council will need to make decisions about your overall agenda, how things fit in with the SCS item and all that stuff. Staff is happy to come back in the May or June timeframe, depending on, you know, what you guys, how you want to organize your time and your agendas. But that is the May is informational, June would be action. So there is some time for us to come back to you.
Great, because I think, Lisa, we really did want to underscore that a lot of what we've talked about is procedural, but also a lot of what needs to be talked about is policy, and we want to make sure that BAFA committee has representation from the different segments of the community, and not just necessarily the communities where the express lanes will be, but those affected by the created express lanes. So we will find time to discuss that at some point before you take it to the commission. Thank you. And on that note, there's no other business to come before the body. Lisa and Andy, now who's in the hitherlands, thank you for this report. We really appreciate, even if it is a special meeting, for you guys to be able to come and talk to us about this more in depth before you take it to the commission committees. Thank you. And thank you, committee members. See you next week.